Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, July 24th, 2014. I'm Sam. Oh, it's just after 2:30 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is with us yet again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So before we get started on real stuff, and we had a little bit of feedback last week that we're going to actually remember to mention this time. We of course have the Malaysian plane in the Ukraine. We have Israel Gaza exploding even more since we last talked about it. Honestly, that's probably all we're really going to get to. There are obviously some there's some Obamacare stuff in the news. So there's some other stuff. If we end up having some time,
I was telling Sam, we're talking about topics. He's talking about the Obamacare thing, and I was like, I don't know. So I've got now I guess I do have a TV now in my home office, okay. Uh-huh. Which I didn't have for a while, okay. So I've got one backup, okay. So I had CNBC going on the TV, so I'm working away. Newsflash. Obamacare, they make subsidies not legal. Okay, great. But it's about 30 minutes later. Newsflash. Appeals court decides affirms that subsidies are legal. I'm like, what the fuck? Wait a minute. You had two different, I guess, appeals courts decide on the same day and on the opposite side. So I was just like, well, I guess it kind of like washes out, really, if I think about it that way.
I think the general guideline on a lot of these things at the moment is if it's at all a controversial issue and you get rulings by lower courts one way or another, it's just like, okay, that's exciting. That's indicative of something. But wait till it gets to the Supreme Court.
And then I'm looking at this thing, by the way, which you didn't put on this. Okay, you want to talk about a bizarre story that's on the thing? Mayfly swarm wreaks havoc in upper Midwest. Some Wisconsin and Minnesota residents have a big cleanup job, overwhelmed car washes. Apparently, I don't know, but these look very disgusting. It's some kind of like massive like flies attacking like whole towns.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm like, you see this car, a swarm of mayflies emerged Sunday from the Mississippi River, causing slippery roads, limited visibility, and leading to a three-vehicle accident on the highway. And you see this car covered in the flies, okay, all right, and then smashed because the road is all covered in these massive flies. I guess it's a good thing I don't live in there. I gotta talk to one of my one of my coworkers lives up there. I gotta ask him about this thing. He says vehicles have been coming nonstop to the Quick Trip car wash since Sunday, leaving it reeking of dead bugs.
That's just excellent.
A lot of that. So apparently there's a lot of dead bugs.
Every region has its own quirks.
We get seasonally over here this thing called love bugs.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you lived over here. I don't know if you recall.
I vaguely remember, yeah.
They would just, you drove to this time, it was like around April, May, and there it was just, oh my God, Jesus. I drove from one place to another. Good Lord, your car was just full of this crap. So anyway, I don't know. So all right, so Obamacare, I thought it was a wash.
Yeah, well, and it's like you wait for the Supreme Court.
I recorded a segment last week on IBM, and we didn't really record it. And to be honest, I kind of lost interest. I don't want to talk about it again.
Basically, what happened there is I hit the record button, and then apparently my finger bounced or something, and I immediately hit stop, like, within a second. And so we talked for 10, 15 minutes.
Apple announced earnings today, and yesterday. I mean, they were good, but it wasn't anything. Nothing really. Other than Tim Cook saying, we've got a great pipeline of products. Now, what the hell that exactly means? I mean, obviously, we all know that new iPhones will be coming out. I mean, that's the obvious part. But if there's something else that's like, interesting of all these things, like people are talking, like me personally, I think the iWatch is idiotic.
And right before the show, I tweeted an article that apparently the latest rumor is that perhaps instead of, Apple is actually talking about making an iWatch platform that like watchmakers can build on top of, as opposed to actually putting out their own watches.
Kind of
like what they're doing with the car thing.
A lot more interesting to me than building a fucking watch. Can I be honest? I don't know. Well, here's the thing, the key to me
on all of this kind of stuff is if it's a watch, I don't give a crap. If it's an interesting device that happens to be on your wrist, then tell me about what's on the device. Like, I couldn't really care much whether it's on my wrist or somewhere else. Tell me about what the device does that's interesting or new that I can't do with other devices already.
Well, here's the thing about, to me, about watches. Either you like watches or you don't, number one. And if you really like a watch, one of the things to me about a watch, is I like an actual mechanical watch. An actual mechanical automatic watch that is powered by basically just your motion.
Well, but to me,
is an elegant thing. Okay,
I think you said an important word there, the elegant thing, because fundamentally there's two routes here, and there's watch as a fashion accessory, of which I couldn't give a crap in the world, and then there is watch as a device that provides some interesting function that just happens to be on your wrist.
Well, I mean, I find it that a mechanical watch like that does provide an instrument. First of all, I like to know what fucking time it is without having to pull out my phone. Okay, number one. Not for nothing. Okay.
Well, this is also the thing, like, I can't imagine not already having my phone in my hand. It's practically, like, attached to me.
For example, how did I know that I was running late for the show while I was putting my son to sleep?
You looked at your watch.
Because I looked at my watch! Okay, you know, that was not a convenient moment to have my fucking phone. Listen, I get it. Some people, here's the bottom line, if it's about telling time,
you can buy, you know, a $5 piece of shit watch.
No. They break every 2 seconds. No, they're $5.
You replace them every 2 weeks.
True.
More seriously, you buy one for $50, a cheap digital watch. You'll have all the time accuracy
I like about the actual fact of something mechanical that actually works with just the motion of my hand. This watch doesn't need winding, doesn't need anything. I mean, just actual motion keeps it just, you know. I think it's cool, but like I said, it's a fashion thing, it's you liking an actual mechanical, or it's just me being intrigued. I like, for example, as we talk about here about technology, and we get to our feedback, we're talking about Pop or IMAP, for God's sakes, how esoteric apparently in technology can you get? I mean, you can get a lot more, but I guess I didn't realize, you know, I guess. I mean, to me, this whole Pop and IMAP thing was very obvious. Of course, now as we've been talking to people and we talked about it in podcasts, apparently it wasn't. Okay, all right. So news to me that something that was obvious to us geeks that are in the tech business. Yeah, sure, we know about this. But, you know, so that's the thing. I like either technology, or on the other hand, I like old. Certain things that work in old ways that are not the modern thing. You know, it fascinates me to see a very manual mechanical thing that works with motion that has no technology involved, right. no computer technology involved whatsoever.
And again, you're talking about a completely different, like, goals and audience. It's like the same thing, e-readers versus physical books.
Yes. You know,
no matter how the increased convenience works of the e-readers, there are going to be some people who still love the actual feel of the physical book in their hand, and they're going to like it for one reason or another. But at some point, it becomes sort of a, you know, It's the difference between, is your goal absorbing the content as quickly as possible or as conveniently as possible, or is your goal some sort of experiential thing, or is your goal some sort of status thing or whatever?
You're talking about experiential thing. My son likes he'll play with the iPad, right?
Right, right.
But he likes the physical books. He loves the pop-up, the little pop-up books and the books that have something pull out and something whatever. You can't replicate that experience on an iPad. It doesn't. Like, the physical feel of, like, feeling like a material that's soft or something or whatever, right, that comes in the book, that kind of stuff. look, the iPad can replicate the text, but it and make other sounds and other things. But that experience, you just can't do it.
It's a different experience. It's not necessarily better or worse, but it becomes an entirely different thing. And this, again, is also where we're going with the watches. Again, like, if it's about watch as something, decorative, or something where, like you said, it's sort of the experiential, you like having a mechanical thing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's sort of one...
I hear it ticking.
Yeah. But my point
is... It's cool!
My point is, that's sort of one concept of this kind of thing, and I think if Apple tries to get in that space, they automatically fail. The place where any of these people, the Samsungs, the Apples, the whatevers, it's more about, if they try to compete at all with, like, high-end jewelry type watches, they're
going to fail miserably.
That's not where they're going. What it is instead is, the only way this will succeed is if they provide a device that has interesting functions that happens to work best when worn on a wrist is better that way than in your pocket on the phone. I don't know.
I don't see it. I mean, like, even like the fitness ones, for example. Here's the thing, right? The fitness thing is driven by, look, I got a sensor, right? Okay, you want a sensor somewhere, okay? Well, listen, you can just attach a sensor to yourself somewhere. I use my phone, for example, as a fitness monitor with a sensor that is somewhere else.
But here's the thing. I had a Fitbit One for 9 months, and I loved my Fitbit One. Okay, I loved it, but it's the kind you clip it on or you put it in your pocket or whatever. I kept it in my pocket, and here's the thing: at least once every other week, I would forget to put it in my pocket. At least once a month, it would go into the it would actually go into the laundry, and I would catch it before it actually went through the laundry.
It's not waterproof.
No. The Fitbit One was not. Okay. But and then you had to plug the damn thing in to charge it every once in a while, and so you'd have to remember to do that. And after 9 months, it actually lost the roll of the dice and actually went through the laundry and died. So I have replaced it with a Garmin Vivo Fit.
You killed something with water. Well, shocking.
Yeah, I know. So shocking.
I've
replaced it with a Garmin Vivo Fit, which is wristband based instead.
Okay.
And it has a couple of additional advantages. First of all, this one is fully waterproof. You can go swimming with it and the whole deal.
Good news.
Also, it has a 1 year battery, so you don't have to remember to charge it. Instead of having a rechargeable battery, it just has, the little watch batteries that last a year. And the difference is, I have not taken this thing off once since I put it on the day I set it up. So it hasn't missed anything.
Okay.
So the fact that this is risky,
but is that one that it doesn't have information on the device itself?
Yes.
Okay.
But like, look,
and you look at that information, so you do have a watch.
Oh, I don't ever have it set to look at the time. Although you actually can. You can push a button and see the time.
So you do have a watch.
I sort of do. I've been wearing something on my wrist for a couple months now. Yes.
There you go.
But here's the thing. So there is a significant advantage to the wrist-based form factor for this kind of device, in that, it's harder to lose. You don't have to remember to take it on and off. All of these kinds of things.
No, I hear you. Yeah.
There are disadvantages.
Like, for example, I have to remember to wear my band for, like, exercise. For example, if I forget, I'm like, oh God, I forgot to wear it.
Right. Now there are disadvantages too. And I wasn't intending to do the Fitbit versus Vivo Fit review today, but the Garmin Vivo Fit, although it's much better from a form factor point of view, has some serious deficiencies versus the Fitbit ones. There's not as good an online ecosystem attached to it. There's not as good integration with other apps. One of the trade-offs for having the one-year battery life is it doesn't have continuous syncing with your smartphone whenever it's in Bluetooth range. Instead, it only syncs when you push a button and tell it to sync.
Oh, that stinks.
And that stinks. I mean, the trade-off trade-off. Okay, you get a year of battery life.
Battery life, right.
It's a trade-off, and you know, I find myself, in terms of having it motivate me to, you know, change my behaviors and exercise more and eat better and all of those kinds of things, the Fitbit was actually more effective than the VivoFit. But the form factor here is much better. So, you know, if this dies next time around, you know, I would look at, you know, at the time I got the Fitbit One, they didn't have a wrist-based one with a display. And then they did, and then they didn't, because they had to recall it because it was irritating people's wrists. They have one that goes on the wrist with no display. But anyway, I would look back to Garmin, and not back to Garmin, back to Fitbit again if I had to replace this again. But because it's waterproof, I probably am not going to kill it.
Good.
And because it's on my wrist, I'm probably not going to lose it. And so this may last a while. On the other hand, if Apple comes out with a competitor that does all of this kind of stuff, I would seriously consider it at the time.
Well, now, okay, so we talked a little bit about the Apple stuff, okay? We didn't want to really drag, but like I said about this whole thing, about the whole Apple thing, listen, this is all bullshit. We have no fucking clue. I actually still questioning whether they will actually release any real, like, watch, to be honest with you. I don't know. I'm very skeptical about the whole thing. That's my take about this. The only thing that I thought the other day that I thought was kind of cool, of course, they keep saying, you know, because, you know, like, this whole thing about having sapphire glass on the, which that would be, to be honest with you, given how many, this year we managed to break a record, we, you know, breaking iOS glass devices, I will say right now that if they did come out with that, I'd be damned.
And if they put that sucker on the iPad, then my next iPad, I wouldn't have to use this stupid, like, heavy-duty case.
Because, right.
Yeah, because, again, for those of you who don't remember, because I broke three iPads in 2013, my wife made me, when we replaced the last one, get this super heavy rubberized enclosure that has, you know, a plastic protection in front of a glass and this big rubber and this shock case and whatever. And I hate it with a freaking passion. but it is my penance for having killed three of these devices, used up the insurance you can buy so that, like, I had to pay didn't have to pay the entire price of a new device, but I had to pay like $250 instead of $50 to get the replacement the last time around. And so this is my penance. I have to use this horrible, horrible case. I would love to replace that with a...
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't that be great? I mean, Jesus, you know, look, I have, like, the watch I'm wearing right now has sapphire glass. Dude, I banged this thing hit. Here's the thing. You look at the watch, and if you look at the actual metal case, it's all scratched.
But the glass
isn't. But the glass is, like, perfect. Nothing. Not one thing.
So why don't they make the whole damn watch out of it?
You're not going to make a whole watch out of glass. Actually, the rest is just scuffed up. It just buffs out.
There's no reason you couldn't make the whole thing out of glass.
You don't want the whole fucking watch out of glass.
But then you could see all the, you know, see the mechanisms.
Now, there are watches. This one doesn't have it, but
I have one
in the back does have that sapphire glass, and you can see that is really cool.
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are
to see
those
that are working. Cool. I'm sorry, but that's really cool.
Yeah, I have a pocket watch around here somewhere actually that has the you can see the interior stuff, and it is pretty cool.
You see, that's what I'm talking about. That's why I like watches. I like watching that entire motion, the whole thing happening.
I fully admit that whole mechanical thing is actually very cool, but I see it as a novelty or something I would wear on a special occasion and not something I would ever want on me all the time.
Oh, I just always had one on.
I know.
I got to be honest with you. I've been used to having a watch since I was a child.
Yeah.
I mean, always. I don't even take them off to sleep. Okay. Right. All right. I only take them off to take to shower. That's it. But I'm like, if it's happened a couple of times in my life that I've forgotten to put my watch on to go somewhere. Oh my God. I feel like lost. I can't. No. Now it's like a point. I can't do it. It's just like, mean, it's like, I can't do it. Can't do it. Anyway, let's go to our feedback.
Oh, okay? Yeah, because yes. And I actually, by the way, did find the other feedback. So first,
oh, good.
First, the old feedback that I mentioned last week that, you know, that I thought I had something from my mom. Yeah, and in fact, I did. This is back. She sent this feedback almost a month ago, June 28th.
We didn't get like reprimanded for language or something.
Not this time. She often says that she can only take us in very small doses. Doses because we curse too much, but
okay, all right. So we're sorry, Mom. try to be better.
I know your dad listens occasionally. How does he feel about cursing?
He hasn't told me anything. He doesn't care.
I figured he would not.
Yeah, we would. Not particularly.
No, her response was basically, we had talked a little bit about some privacy issues, and she says, note, I'm actually pleased to hear that your generation actually cares about privacy. My impression is that tweeters and Facebookers and others want the world to know everything and think keeping things private is weird.
I got to be honest with you. I am seeing
a pullback.
Yeah, a big one from younger people regarding privacy. I do think that they were given a whole bunch of tools that made it be easy to be public, and I think they've realized how bad that is to be public all the time. And I'm seeing a pullback. I'm talking about my nephews. I've got quite a lot of nephews that are aged between 10 and 24. Uh-huh. Okay, so that's the age range, and I've seen that they've pulled back a lot.
Well, there are a couple things there. One is that they're pulling back somewhat. They're being more cautious on sharing, but also they move where they do things and how they do things. Like there was a big pullback away from Facebook once everybody's parents started getting on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but that doesn't mean they weren't doing anything. It was moving to other places. It was moving to Tumblr. It was moving to Snapchat. It was moving to, you know, all of these other places. And more recently, we've had the rise of at least what they claim to be anonymous surfaces like Secret. I don't know. Have you tried out Secret? Do you even know what Secret is?
No, it's the first time I heard of it.
So you should check out Secret. I finally, after hearing buzz about it for you know, months, downloaded Secret. Secret's basic idea is it's kind of like Twitter, but anonymous. Okay.
I don't want another fucking platform.
But here's the thing. So
I hate getting on more platforms.
Let me describe this a little bit, and you don't have to get on the damn thing. Although it's kind of funny to like put on. But what it does is it collects your contact information. You can sync it with Facebook. You can sync it with your address book. Whatever. So it is actually collecting a shitload of information about you, by the way. But what it does is, so you can see things posted by your friends or people in your address book or whatever, but you can't tell which one of them posted. Okay? So you know somebody you know posted this. Or somebody at the same company or someone in the same town or whatever. Because they've got one section that's friends and friends of friends. And then they've got another section that is just globally things that are trending. So it'll have like people from your city, people from your company, things like that. And so, you know, you get the people and like what you see more of here than anything else are I'm not necessarily putting these in order, but A, people bitching about work. And things they don't like about their job, their boss, their things like that, that they wouldn't necessarily post other places. And B, people talking about their sex lives.
Love it.
You know, and
well, here's the thing, right? But if you have a circle of only like about three friends,
You don't know, like for instance,
it's one of three people. Well, no, I don't know. I can probably figure it out.
But you don't know that it's one of unless you have an extreme, like you import your address book, like and okay, yeah, yes, you're right. Know, if you only have three people in your address book, you might be fucked. But like, but most people have, you know, potentially hundreds in there.
Sorry, Mom.
And hundreds of Facebook friends.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Oops. Sorry, Mom.
But you know, so. And of course, if somebody says something that identifies themselves because they're talking about something very specific, then you're like, aha, I know who you are. But so far, you know, I've honestly, I've been looking at this thing for maybe a month now, off and on, and only a handful of times have people who it identifies as my friends have actually posted. They're lots of friends of friends. And so, like, I don't know who the hell those friends of friends are. So let me give you a sampling right now.
Okay.
So this is from a friend of friend, the most recent one on my list right now. Okay. Oh, apologies, Mom. So the very first one I look at here, the most recent one, this is a friend of a friend. Excuse me while I play with my dick under the table during this meeting.
Oh, God. For God's sakes. For real?
Yep. Let's see.
I'll
skip right. Another one that's sort of off key like that. Another one off key. Another one.
No. Come on. You got to go. Okay. You already started with that one. I mean, what the hell? For God's sakes. Real?
Okay. So the first four in a row are all sex things. So okay. The second one, also a friend of a friend. This guy from Grindr definitely had spicy food before eating my hole out. My asshole is on fire.
Oh, God.
The next.
God. Jesus. Now that I'm hearing this, I don't want to be on this platform.
I was gonna try to find one that wasn't about sex, so I'm scrolling down a little bit. Here's one. It was like the fifth or sixth one down. A friend of a friend. I get three day weekends and can't imagine working 5 days in a row anymore. I can't believe how spoiled I've become. You know, so...
Okay, there you go.
When you see a former coworker get an awesome job and think, her? Let's see, what's...
That happens. I mean, you know, but...
Let's see, the most recent one I can find that's actually from a friend, as opposed to a friend of a friend. Let me see if I can find that. Anyway, but the point was, people are moving their sharing to platforms that they have a little bit more control.
Can I be honest? I mean... Look, why would I give a fuck about an anonymous comment of somebody I don't know who's a friend of a friend? I mean, really? The licking of the asshole of the fucking... Who cares? I mean, you know, you want to talk about...
Here's one. This one is actually listed from a friend, not a friend of a friend.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know who this was. When I saw this, I actually thought maybe this is Ivan.
Yeah, I'm not on there. So
I know. So, if you post inspirational quotes to LinkedIn, I am never hiring your simple ass.
I would have said that. Okay. You know, there are certain people on LinkedIn that really, oh my God, there are certain people that I had to grab one guy that I know. All right. Former employee of mine, and I had to tell him, dude, LinkedIn is not okay. You're posting your Twitter feed on LinkedIn. You're posting shit about babes, crap, whatever. Listen,
wrong place.
Unlink. Okay, that. And he thought, oh shit, you're right. And so immediately he did that. But I'm like, some people, I'm like, dude, I mean, there's places and there's places, you know? I think Twitter is a place where a free-for-all is allowed, you know? Everybody's expecting Twitter to be a free-for-all.
Except the people who post stupid stuff and get fired for it all the time.
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is that people, if they look at your Twitter feed, they're not expecting you to see... inspirational. It's a thought stream. They're not expecting maybe some of the most careful thought out things, articles about deep information, something, whatever. But you're expecting just a wide variety. I mean, I don't know. When I look at a Twitter feed, I mean, I see all sorts of different things. It's just a free for all, in my opinion. So, if you post that kind of stuff on there, nobody's going to be like I see people posting about fashion. I see people posting about personal things. I see people posting news. It's just, you know, all over the place. But LinkedIn is a professional networking place. All right. It is really, I call it, it's like your living resume.
Right.
All right. Okay. It's where you show your professional persona. And that is not the place for you to be posting stuff about, I don't know, hot babes, other stuff. It just, if you do, you're just an idiot. And if you post those inspirational, you know, it's like those fucking posters you used to put at the office about, you know, it's like teamwork. If you work together, everything will happen. Or shit like that. You know, really? That's what you're posting? You're a fucking idiot.
Yes. Anyway, we've gotten so off base on this.
Well, anyway, to continue
with the feedback.
Yes.
Is there a couple more things here? One, still from my mom, she was amused that Alex tried to hide in Amy's car, and she said that she trusted Amy had a good time at the festival thing. She did, although she had a bunch of complaints about the organizers and things that they did badly, but whatever. And she mentions that at 18, she was away at college and on her own for September till Christmas, so nothing so short as 3 days, and they couldn't phone each other because that was too expensive, so they exchanged weekly letters, which ties into the kind of stuff we talked about after that, about how sort of different things are, you know, these days in terms of how, you know, how tightly held the kids are for longer, as opposed to...
Oh, my
to-
God. I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm like, you know, Jesus Christ, I went on trips to... Dude, I used to go to New York and Washington, D.C. on my own when I was fucking...
Well, and there was
14, 15, 16 years old.
Well, there was this case last week, which I should have noted because it would have been a good thing to, you know, talk about earlier. But since we're on the topic, there's a woman, I forget what city she lived in, but anyway, she had a job that took her to sort of after school time or whatever, and normally. Her daughter, I think it was, who was like 9 or 10 or somewhere around that age, so preteen, but not like a little kid. Anyway, the bottom line, she usually went home and did some things at home, but she asked for permission from her mom to please go to the park near her house to play for a while on these couple of days. Yeah. And so for like three days in a row or something like that, after school, instead of going home, she went to the park.
How old was she
while her
again?
Mom was like 10 or something.
Okay.
Okay. And so what happened is some of the other parents at the park saw a kid alone and they asked her where her mom was. And she said, my mom's at work. And so they called the cops.
Are you shitting me?
And not only did they call the cops, but the cops ended up arresting the mom and putting the kid into at least temporary. I don't know how this ended up being resolved, but into temporary foster care.
Oh, come on.
Exactly.
What the hell?
I spent many, many, many hours at the park by myself when I was younger than 10.
So did I.
You know,
what the hell? There
was a park.
I used to go. Listen, I remember that we used to go on these, you know, I was 7 years old or 8 years old, and my parents went out to dinner one time, and I was at a hotel. I stayed at the video arcade at the frickin' hotel by myself for a couple of hours playing while they were having dinner. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, and they give me the key. I was, okay, when you're done, you want to go to the room? Here's the key. Go back to the room, and you can watch TV. And I was like, okay, sure. Hey, what the hell? You know? What the fuck is going to happen? I'm in a freaking hotel. Ah, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard the follow-up, but if... Oh, here we go. I found an article for it. Mom jailed for letting her 9-year-old play at the park unsupervised, and the daughter is in state custody. So let's see. There's I found it on Free Range Kids from July 14th, but there's an article on WJBF. There's an embedded news article there. But anyway, so if anybody wants to look that up.
Is she still in jail, I guess?
I don't see a follow-up here. And there's an article at Reason.com, too, which is by the person who runs Free Range Kids. from July 14th. So yeah, here's the good article. Mom jailed because she let her 9-year-old daughter play in the park unsupervised by Lenore Skenetsky, July 14th on reason.com. You can look it up. And let's see. I'm just trying to see if there's a follow up. I don't see it yet. They've got to let her go by now. This is bad enough as it is. Somebody has to realize this is a serious overreach. But it's like, come on, like, and you know, and look, and people, when you ask about this, they'll say, you know, but it was a different time when we were kids. And you know what the difference was? It's safer now.
Yeah, it is.
if you look at crime rates, if you look at
they're all down.
It's so much better now than it was when we were kids in the 70s. You know, it's like absolutely insane. You know, and you gotta push back about this. You gotta let and you know, we talked about this in the context of Alex walking away a month or two ago, or listen, a few weeks ago.
Listen, we're
but you know, it.
I'm gonna say that we. In my family, I think we keep a pretty good balance upon supervision and like stuff like whatever. So
you're not in gated communities,
okay, all right. So like my sister, for example, is about to turn 11-year-old. Look, he goes biking around the neighborhood and goes to the park that's near the house and stuff or whatever, unsupervised. And we're not freaking watching him every freaking second of the day. He's 11 years old. I mean, he's not freaking two.
Yeah. Yeah, right, you're not talking about a 2-year-old is different. You know, they need a lot more supervision. Right. But you know, if you're talking a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, let alone any older than that, but certainly like by the time they're 7,
a freaking gated community with like freaking like going, well, what the hell?
Screw the gated community, even non-gated communities.
I would imagine those people. Putting the same fucking, if there was the same fucking people over there, they would raise the same huff and puff.
Yeah, and look, you know, I would like, we don't live in a gated community where I am. It's just a neighborhood. And I would like to think, you know, we have a little bit more restriction on Alex when he's 4, but by the time he's 7 or 8, he's going to have free run of the neighborhood. As long as he tells us where he's going and he comes back at a reasonable time, you know?
Listen, I used to go to, I guess the first time I went on a trip by myself, I had to be like 13. Okay? I mean, I was like, well, I'm not total by myself. I went with a chaperone. We went to Washington, D.C.
I went to a trip to Europe like that when I was in sixth grade or whatever.
13, 14.
And by the way, that included, we did have chaperones, but we did have like free time where we were allowed to like wander around.
We were allowed to go and by ourselves. And I went on this, I went on the metro all over Washington, D.C. I visited monuments. I did this, I did that. I didn't have anybody fucking following me around to go to all these fucking places. I went by myself, you know. As a matter of fact, I remember that by the time I wasn't even like 16, for God's sakes, you know. As I grew a big mustache, I remember I even went to a restaurant and got a beer. They served me one. They didn't even card me, for God's sakes. I remember it was like Jesus Christ. I'm like, for real. I'm like, gosh, I look too fucking old. That's what I said when I was 16. Fuck.
Anyway, we're still amazingly on feedback.
We're still on feedback. Okay. All right.
So we got feedback from Bruce. We talked last week about Gaza, and we'll talk about it again. And I had mentioned the analogy of this is a kid throwing toys at you, and you react by shooting them.
I don't totally agree with this analogy because...
Let's talk about it. So Bruce gave the analogy. He says a better analogy, the rape victim, Gaza, punches the rapist, Israel, in the face. Then the rapist gets angry and kills her. So tell us why you disagree.
But he's saying there's a the Gazans are totally innocent. And I'm like, you know what? I'm sorry. Hamas is not an innocent party. This whole thing over the last 20 years either. All right. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, but no, he's not necessarily saying he's innocent. He mentions they do violence. But what he's saying is there's a long history here.
But he's calling Gaza a rape victim. A rape victim is innocent.
No. Well, but look. But maybe they were at the beginning. I mean, look at this.
We've got
a history since the 1940s of Israel systematically taking things away from the populations of the West Bank and Gaza, and doing all kinds of things to do economic violence on them, take away their land, restrict them. And so you're not, if you restrict yourself to the last 5 years, okay, maybe they're not innocent. But if it, the analogy covers, to make this analogy proper, you have to start, you know, at least, you know, 40, 50 years
ago.
Even
if you go back to 50 years, that's not totally true either. I mean, if you go back, it isn't, because the reality is that a lot of the actions why Israel did that, to a certain extent, had to do with increasing level of violence. And, oh, by the way.
No, but you have to start earlier. You have to start when it was taken away from the Palestinians in the first place to create the state of Israel.
Well, but listen. Okay, all right. But here's my argument about that as well. Listen, if you're going to start arguing about land being taken away from anybody in the fucking in between Europe and fucking China, for God's sakes, blow up every country in the way.
Don't forget the Native Americans.
Exactly. Give me a break about that, okay? That's the other stupid argument. Oh, well, we created Israel, so we took away the... Listen, we created Iraq. We created Iran. We created fucking Pakistan. We created Bangladesh. Jesus Christ, which country wasn't fucking created by that kind of fiat? Give me a fucking break!
So look, anyway, look, his point was... The main point here is that there is a long history of the Israelis doing... at least economic, but also physical violence against the Palestinians. And you can make an argument that at least some of this violence here is self-defense.
Okay. Yeah. And there's a long history of every frickin' country around Israel trying to just obliterate them out of existence. Okay. And the Palestinians aided in that. Okay, all right, and jumped up and down and cheered, and we're hoping for the total destruction of Israel. Okay, so let's not fucking call anybody some fucking victim here, because both have been quite at each other's throats for the last fucking 60 years of the of this whole fucking thing. So okay. Let's take that out of the equation.
Let's finish feedback and talk about the rest of this. Go back to what we were talking about
last week, which was the proportionality of the Israeli response to what was happening, like right now, okay? Which both you and I agree
We're going to do a whole segment on Israel in just a minute. So let's finish up with the feedback. So we got you on that one. So Bruce also, by the way, thanked us for the tutorial on IMAP versus POP, and said he'd made some adjustments to.
Apparently, he
was still using POP. Yeah. And also he gives the I reminded him, remember, if it gets deleted on the server, it gets deleted everywhere, because I got burnt that way once. And I'll tell you specifically, the thing I happened is probably a fairly rare thing, but I had a server crash that deleted a whole bunch of email, and I wasn't fully cognizant of that time about what the mechanics of IMAP meant. I figured when I plugged my thing back in, you know, the server administrator even said, because it was a friend of mine, said that, you know, there was some data loss there. And I was like, okay, well, I'll resync, and the stuff that I have on my local machine will resync back up to the server, and everything will be happy.
Because it felt it as deletions, and so therefore what it did is, like, it just...
So it deleted all my local copies, and there was a set of this that I didn't have a backup of. I lost almost a month worth of email, I'm anal about keeping all my email forever, so I was devastated about this. So it was a big deal. So yes, make sure, you know, if you want to keep something forever for archival purposes, move it to a local folder offline, and then of course, like everything else, make sure you have backups. You never want anything important to be only in one place. You want to have it backed up to multiple drives locally, and ideally back that up somewhere offsite as well. And there are numerous ways of doing that, and services to do that. Before you do, I want to mention the other thing that he pointed out, which is a good thing to note as well, is of course old emails on third-party servers are not protected for privacy or Fourth Amendment stuff. There have been numerous court rulings to that effect, that basically if you've left it on a server more than a certain amount of time, there's no expectation of privacy whatsoever. So that's very counter to the models that Gmail and everything else have that want to keep your stuff there forever. But if you care about that kind of stuff for any reason, then you certainly... it's convenient to keep a certain amount of stuff on the server so that you have access to it everywhere. But after a certain age, if you're archiving stuff, you want to put it someplace that's completely under your own control. Or if it's somewhere else, make sure it's encrypted and encrypted by you with keys that only you have, not the people who run the server have. Okay, go ahead.
I got some feedback from the person that we were talking about with the whole POP and IMAP thing.
Oh, yes.
I guess that she was just miffed that we kept talking about them.
Oh, that we talked about it on the show?
Yes. but yes, I did get that feedback. Yes.
So she listened?
Yes, she did.
There you go.
Okay, so there you go. All right, so that's another person I was surprised was listening. So
oh, and
go.
So and nice, we've got her mad at us.
Excellent. Yes. So, I guess she won't be
calling me for advice anytime soon.
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it, she's been, actually.
Did you like your wife's comment?
I don't remember at that time.
Okay.
I mean,
because your wife, of course, said, "Oh, she calls every 5 minutes."
Yes, she did. But I don't know if she listened to the whole show, but I do know that she did. I will say this. I'm trying to figure out. She hasn't called in a few days.
Oh, there you go.
So either it's solved or she's
so annoyed at you that she's not calling.
Well, I don't know. The last time, I will admit that my patience has been running quite thin lately with her calls. I gotta be honest, I have not been. I mean, I think the last, what day is today? Wednesday, right? I think the last call I got was Saturday, but she called me. Well, okay, so this is the call I got. She went and accidentally, instead of copying something to Dropbox, hit the command that said move.
Uh-huh.
And somehow the move actually failed, and a whole bunch of the stuff that she tried to move, like, disappeared.
Ended up nowhere? Oh, yeah. That shouldn't happen even when you do moves.
I agree, but the thing is that she was using the web client instead of actually using the... Exactly. Okay. I was like, I installed on her the freaking client on the computer. I'm like, why the hell? I showed you how to use the freaking folder. Why were you using the web client?
So what you're saying here is basically, since she's annoyed about you talking on the show, about us talking on the show, about how silly and stupid she was, you want to talk about some more things that she's doing and not understanding technology. Because that'll cheer her right up.
Yes, maybe. Anyway, so yes, the thing is, Saturday was not a good... I get this call, right? Okay. And, you know, I had gone out on a date with my wife, like, on Friday night, and I left my son being babysat by my parents. So Saturday morning meant that I had to go to my parents' house to pick up my son. But that at the same time, I actually will thank my brother-in-law that my brother-in-law bought. He had already a very big 50-plus inch TV. He bought a TV the same as mine, but the bigger model when I bought mine. Okay, all right, that I had in my living room. And he bought a couple of bigger ones. And he was like, he told me he bought them. Hey, can I have the old one? I'm like, and he said, sure. Okay, just pick it up. I'm like, fuck. Well, it's like a 55 inch. I mean, it's a very big TV. So I called a friend of mine with a pickup truck, and I said, well, okay, could we go down there and we'll pick up? I gotta pick up the TV. Then I gotta pick up my son, and then I gotta go head back home in order to go take my son back, install a TV, move the TV. What I did is I moved the TV that was in the living room that I had, which was about 40 inch decent size. I actually had a piece of furniture that I had built in my bedroom to fit. I put that one there. But then we had to install, obviously, that TV on the wall. I had a wall bracket and everything for it. Bup, bup, bup. So I had to do all this thing. And then I'm picking up my son. I got this, whatever. Bup, bup, bup. And then I got Kathy calling me about this. And I'm like... Okay, so anyway,
we've got almost an hour before actually getting to any of our real topics. So look, I got one more. This isn't really a feedback.
An hour?
Almost.
And we haven't taken any breaks.
Now, It's been 50 minutes. Anyway, I got this one other thing. It wasn't really feedback to us, but it was a Twitter exchange that I had that I just thought I'd mention. You know Mark Andreessen?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so he was tweeting a few hours ago. And he mentions, and this was part of a larger conversation, I guess, but he mentions every billionaire suffers from the same problem. Nobody around them ever says, hey, that stupid idea you had is really stupid. Okay. And he also mentioned, you know, people don't get any smarter when they become a billionaire, CEO, king, president, senator, noblest. If
true,
anything,
you start getting a lot of yes men around.
Right.
Yes.
And so, for anybody who is listening who doesn't know who he is, he's one of the founders of Netscape.
Netscape.
And he made a crap load of money
on the board of a bunch of companies.
He's also a partner in a venture capital company,
et cetera, and so forth.
So
yes.
He's not quite a billionaire himself, but he's close.
I actually thought he was.
Wikipedia gives him at around $600 million, but you know that was a couple years ago.
I think that's underestimated. I think he's probably still worth over $1 billion right now. Okay. So anyway.
Anyway, so somebody replies to him, somebody with the Twitter handle Econ Talker replies to that and says, clearly, billionaires need to hire no men or no women to keep them from doing stupid things. And I saw that. I happened to be at my computer. I immediately replied and said, I'm available.
Wait.
Clearly, billionaires need to hire no men. Or no women.
Oh, no, not nobody. You mean
like no yes men? Like yes men, no men.
As a term, right? No men. Okay.
No
yes.
men or no women to keep them from doing stupid things. And I immediately replied and said, "I'm available for that job."
And?
Well, Mark Andreessen favorited my tweet.
Oh, you got a favorite? Whoa!
There you go. But anyway, because you know that. You got to admit, that would be a cool job. Just sit around, following the billionaire around, and whenever they're about to do something stupid, just slap them. And honestly, this is not a new thing. This is why kings had jesters and fools. That their job and the whole the devil's advocate role, all of this stuff was designed to tell people in power when they're doing something silly or stupid. So this isn't a new idea at all. But it'd be a fun job.
But it is a total true thing. One of the things that I found in corporate America is you go and you work with people and whatever whatnot, is you find all these people, and listen, obviously you've got to measure how you do everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, you don't go to a guy and tell him he's a fucking moron. But, because people want to do that.
Right, okay, of course.
Right? And they feel like, oh, yeah, I need to, and I'm like, okay.
Truth to power, man.
Oh, yeah, I need to tell him the truth. I'm like, okay, all right. No, you need to tell him you need to somehow push back in a good way. And it's like, you know, you need to, look, when you, somebody, there are certain people that will just hear somebody say something idiotic and not provide a proper counter argument to say that doesn't make sense. We're not going to do that. Right. Okay, they'll just sit there and go ha 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 ha.
They're worried for their job. They're worried for their reputation in front of the guy. They're worried the guy is just going to say no. You're stupid.
I actually, on a couple of occasions, have blown up at managers. My boss, I don't do it on a regular basis, but I remember years ago, man, I was 6-7 years ago. I had a boss drive me crazy. And I don't know. I basically got him on the phone at 10 o'clock at night. And this is, I didn't do this regular, but I told him off. I said, I don't want to hear any more of your crap about this. And a guy, you don't understand how I work. You don't understand what he's doing. And you know what? That the guy after that, because I blew up at him, basically gave me totally free rein because right. I think he respected me because he realized, you know what? He's not going around. He's not a no guy. He's not a guy that's not trying to get stuff done. But you know what? When I pushed him to a point where it was just so idiotic, there was just whatever. He stood his ground and said no. And if you want to fire me, fire me. But you know, this is what it is. And you know what? The guy respected that very much. You've got to use it. My point is that you have to say that and you have to use it at the proper moments. It's but, not.
Yeah, but it's very true that, like, a lot of people in leadership, not just billionaires, but, like, a lot of people in leadership positions, and certainly, like, yeah, President of the United States is one where this applies, they would all actually be very well served by hiring somebody with the specific mission profile.
Of being the counter-argument.
Of being devil's advocate for everything, of poking holes in arguments, of telling them when they think they're wrong, or when there's a good, legitimate argument. Like, it doesn't even have to be their own personal view. Their job is to bring in the opposite viewpoint in every discussion. And it's very useful to have somebody play that role. And, you know, certainly at a certain point, you make the decision and then you move on. But, you know, making sure having mechanisms in place to specifically try to counteract these kinds of yes men situations and groupthink situations and all this kind of stuff is a useful thing that not enough people in power take advantage of. Anyway. We have gone 55 minutes in our introductory fluff session for the beginning of the show, but we actually talked about a few real topics.
Yes, we did.
We just didn't take any breaks. So we are now going to take a break, and we will come back and we will do...
Talk about...
We will do two more segments, probably not 55 minutes long each, I hope.
I hope not.
But to talk about the Malaysian plane that was downed in the Ukraine, and Israel-Gaza in a little bit more detail than we just talked about.
Let's talk about the plane first.
And we'll talk about the plane first. We will be back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, we're back. And, you know, if we hadn't gone on for an hour, I would have mentioned, you know, my dad and stepmom visited and we saw some cousins and all that kind of fun stuff. But, you know, and I've taken the last 3 days off, which has been awesome. But, you know, we went off about all this other stuff. So, Ukraine, plane, shot down.
So what do you think? I mean, for those of you that don't know,
you know, if anybody listening to our show actually doesn't know what happened in Ukraine this last week, you know, I don't understand. You know, because, like, look, you're listening to a news and politics show, but you don't know about the major event of the last week. But, okay, go ahead, summarize it.
I mean, I don't know. They could have been, you know.
In a cave?
They could have. Yes, they could have happened.
They could have had a brief coma.
What if they only
They only rely got on news from us.
Corner for That's information.
Right. You know, if your only source about information of the world is our show, I feel really sorry for you.
Oh, come on! Don't say that! Why do you say that?
Oh, well, you know, we do provide insightful analysis and such.
Yes, we do!
But, you know, it's not necessarily a complete, you know, overview. Anyway.
No, it's not a complete overview of everything that's happening. That's definitely true. Anyway, so, plane, Malaysian Airlines flight, flying to from Amsterdam to Malaysia, goes flying over to Ukraine. And as a matter of fact, what I was seeing is that there was a notice to airmen that the European I can't remember. There's a European the air traffic control. They had issued a notice that because of missiles and other stuff fired, that the minimum altitude to be over Ukraine was 32,000 feet. And so,
but yeah, well, what?
No, it was 32.
They were at 33. Go ahead.
They were at 33. And they were above that altitude.
Yep.
Now, if there were other airlines that, because of their concerns, had decided to divert and get their planes to go to Ukraine because of the stuff that was happening. Planes flying over to Ukraine and, you know, freaking bad luck of freaking Malaysian Airlines that after the shit that happened like a couple of months ago. I mean, there were other planes in the area. They decided to freaking
There were apparently within, you know, going over exactly that same route, there were apparently like at least five planes within, you know, 20 miles of this plane at the time it was shot down.
Yep. And
other commercial jetliners.
Other commercial. Yep. And freaking, you know, you got to talk about bad luck. They freaking fired a damn missile from the ground, surface air missile, and it's been confirmed by U.S. intelligence. It was definitely a surface air missile. And it freaking brought down the damn plane. And you know, look, this is obviously, I am not of a belief that Vladimir Putin ordered a freaking 777.
Yeah, no, look, here's the thing. And I think this is absolutely clear at this point. And like, you know, in the first 24 hours, there was a lot of fog of war, confusion about what was going on, whatever, contradictory reports, all this kind of stuff. At this point, it seems to me absolutely clear what happened, which is that the guys with the anti-missile battery thought they were shooting down a Ukrainian military plane and only later realized, oops, we shot down a civilian airliner instead. Yep. It was not their intent. They absolutely did intend to shoot down a plane. They just didn't think it was what it was. They thought it was a military transport plane, whatever. And you can criticize them for all the reasons they shouldn't have thought that, and they should have been able to tell what it was. And there are many reasons why they should have been able to identify it properly. But it's clear to me it was a mistake. It's clear to me it wasn't intentional, because here's the thing. There's absolutely nobody in that scenario, not the Ukrainian government, not the Ukrainian rebels, not Russia, not any of them, who benefit from shooting down a Malaysian airliner who just happens to be flying over the country.
Now, here's the one thing about this whole thing. I mean, agreed. But it's just, somebody mentioned before, listen, not the only people who have ever shot down a freaking commercial plane accidentally. The U.S. did it, okay? We had the USS Vincennes in the Persian Gulf, went and freaking, you know, shot a freaking A-300 out of the sky, okay, all right? Killed about the same amount of people, okay? You know, the U.S. did totally fess up to the fact that they fucked up and we blew a freaking plane out of the sky. You know, now the problem about this whole thing, you know, it's just that, they know that a lot of freaking commercial, you know, the difference is they knew that quite a lot of commercial air traffic goes through there. They know this. Okay.
Well, both the Russian case and the American case, that was also true. I mean, it wasn't like out of the blue. There was a scheduled airline flight, but you know, it was an operator error. An operator under the heat of battle thought somebody was coming at him and took action, and it was a huge
there's a difference. The Ukrainians were taking pot shots on any military plane that was flying over.
Yeah.
The guys in the Vincennes actually, for whatever mistaken reason, thought that this plane was actually coming at them.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that is a big distinction. Okay. They actually thought.
In the Russian case of it was what, Korean Airlines 007, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, in that case, it had strayed into Russian territory and
in that case, that was fucked up because the plane was already past the territory when they shot it.
Yeah.
Down.
Right. And okay. In any case, all of these cases are cases where the people who did the shooting down regretted it after the fact. Let's just put it that way. Yes. However, what's happening here, which is, you know, is boggling my mind at this point, is the Russians and the Russian separatists are closing ranks trying to deny it.
Right.
It's like and trying to say it's anybody else but them, or it was this, and there are all kinds of conspiracy theories flying back and forth, and no, it was the Ukrainians who did it, not the Ukrainian government, I mean. And it's like, you know, Putin, the correct move here for either the separatists or Putin are to say outright, we're sorry, we fucked up, we thought it was a military plane, we didn't realize it was a civilian airliner, this should not have happened, however, this is a war zone, and we recommend from now on no civilians go over this until the conflict is over.
Yeah, and then of course we got the U.S. like basically banning all flights to Tel Aviv now because of because of jitters. Yeah. But my point is that it's just, I mean,
but look, more than that, what we've got is you've got the same crowd you always see doing the Obama must do something. Can't he see the threat from Putin here? They're the embodiment of evil. Look what they just did. We have to be more serious. There must be more sanctions. We should be arming the Ukrainians. We should be doing this. We should be bringing in NATO. And it's like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, I know.
Really? Yeah. I mean, like, okay. I understand. This was a horrible thing that happened. But you can't act like they were intentionally shooting down commercial airliners. That is not what happened.
No, it'd be completely fucked up.
If new evidence surfaces tomorrow, I will say, I'm sorry, I got it wrong. They actually were. But everything we've seen so far indicates this was an accident. I mean, and an accident in the sense of shooting down the wrong plane, not that they didn't want to shoot down a plane.
You know,
they absolutely did want to shoot down
a plane. The thing that pisses me off, I'm looking at, I looked up the stuff on the Iran Air shoot down. Okay, yeah. All right. And less than 2 weeks afterwards, I mean, you see there's this press conference with U.S. Secretary of Defense and one of the, I think the chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff are at a press conference where obviously they're very distraught admitting, yeah, we completely.
Well, and I was actually interested in this timeline as well, because, I mean, you say less than 2 weeks. We're obviously, you know, only a week past this last thing.
Now, this is, of course, I'm looking at a picture at a press conference now.
Right, right. So the question is, did we spend the first few days trying to say it was somebody else?
I believe we did. I believe, no, not somebody else. At first we tried to say that the plane, the transponder, that they were using the rocket, something was malfunctioning, that they got that. But it did not take very much long after that for the U.S. to say, yeah.
Well, and you know, frankly, you know, Putin could still turn around. He could get on Russian television tomorrow and say, you know what? This was a Russian-operated anti-aircraft system that we were operating on behalf of the Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, and we take full responsibility, and we will, you know, do all the kinds of things that people do in terms of paying the survivors, the relatives, et cetera. They could still come out and do this, but it doesn't seem like, you know, if Putin had wanted to move in that direction, he could have been moving in that direction already. Of course, part of the problem is that Putin the Russians have so far denied that they're actually providing this level of support to the rebels. And also, it's been pointed out, by the way, this is a very complex system. The people running it would have had to have extensive training, not just like a few weeks worth of training or whatever. So most likely it was not, hey, here's a weapon system, rebels, go have fun. It was most likely actually Russians manning the system. Now, that's unclear. You know, we don't know that, but that's the speculation at this point. But, you know, it's one of these, you know, people always get in trouble with the cover-ups. And it's like, come on, just come clean, admit what happened, take the consequences, and see where you go from there. I mean, and it's perfectly reasonable to say, war zone, keep out. We're going to be using anti-aircraft missiles here. They could, the rebels, the separatists could declare a quote unquote no fly zone and say, keep out. We will shoot down anything that comes into this space. And, you know, okay. I mean, it's not like that's nice. It's not like war is fun, but you'd at least be, I don't know. Anyway, it's a mess. It's getting worse. Now, I see this, though. This is the kind of thing that can potentially end towards more quickly resolving this issue in the Ukraine because you could see potentially one of the possible outcomes, and this is by no means certain, in fact, probably the contrary, but one of the possible outcomes is that the separatist region gets weakened because of this, because Russia will be more reluctant to put in high-level support, and morale gets affected because they didn't want to do this either. You know, Ukraine takes this opportunity to push back in and take over eastern Ukraine. Maybe. Or Russia could double down and go the opposite direction and throw more into it. I don't know, but you know, it's potentially a catalyst moment that will cause the conflict in the Ukraine after this to be somewhat different than the conflict before this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you know, people have pointed out, you know, people have been saying, well, you know, why are we flying over war zones anyway? And the thing is, and then, you know, a number of posts have been made showing, you know, actually there are something like 15 active war zones in the world right now, and almost all of them, commercial air flights fly over all the time because they've determined
that there's not an active threat. Well, yeah, because most of them are, right, because most of them, they're not freaking using surface-to-air missiles to fight, you know,
they don't, shoot down. Most of them, they don't have the technology to do this.
Right.
So you figure if you're flying at, you know, 35,000 feet over, you know, some, you know, third world country that's having a civil war, you know, they're not going to touch you. They can't touch you, even if they wanted to.
Exactly.
But that's not the case here because Russia's been
giving them freaking surface-to-air missiles.
Now, one of the other things that was pointed out this last week by a few different people is, you know, we've been also talking about this, the ISIS, the caliphate in Iraq and Syria. Well, guess what? They've got a lot of American weapons.
Yeah.
Some of which we actually gave them back when we thought they were the good counterweight to Assad in Syria, and some of which they've captured from the Iraqis.
Well, as far as I know, most of the freaking, well, they don't have like, whatchamacallit, this type of surface missile, like a surface to air missile. They have those shoulder mounted ones that about, you know, yeah, they're not going to hit an airliner with one of these.
I mean, right. Unless it's taking off or landing.
Exactly. Correct. Yeah.
But they, you know, but they've got some fairly sophisticated weapons and they're doing a lot of damage with those weapons. And so one of the questions here is, okay, if you blame Russia for this, you know, can we then blame the U.S. for everybody who's killed with American weapons all across the world?
Maybe. All right.
Maybe. But, you know, I think one of the differences that is yet to be seen, we really have to understand just how much was Russia actually involved? Was it actually Russian troops who fired the shot, or did they just hand over the weapon system and say, go have fun, kids?
I think it seems so far that it was like they handed over the weapons to the separatists.
It actually, from what I've been reading and seeing, it's leaning the other direction.
Really?
Because there are a couple factors leading into that. One, the degree of training needed. First of all, the weapons were in country in the Ukraine apparently for less than 48 hours when this happened.
Okay.
Because there were reports on the AP and others from reporters who had seen these things move into eastern Ukraine just within the last few days. And then immediately after, within a few hours after the airline was shot down, there were reports of the same equipment moving back to Russia. Now, you could have that even if the locals were in control. They could say, please take it back now. But the Russians are deeply involved at that point in any case. But then the other thing I've heard is, you know, look, the level of training needed to operate these is not a few weeks or even a few months. You know, you have operators who train on these things for years before they're authorized to use them.
I can totally believe that. Yeah.
You know, in which case, you know, some eastern Ukrainian person is probably not in that position. And also, you know, Russia, throughout this conflict, their modus operandi is, you know, yeah, there are some locals that they stand up, but they've got, you know, if you remember when they took over Crimea, there were a lot of these, you know, quote unquote, local farmers defending buildings or taking over them or whatever. And they were clearly actually Russian special forces, you know, most of what I've read is suspecting the Russians were doing something similar here, but the key word is suspecting. There's no proof at this point. And a lot of what's been happening after the crash has been, you know, obstructing access to the crash scene, obstructing access to evidence, moving the weapons who probably did this back into Russia. You know, there's a lot going on here where the intention is to prevent us ever actually knowing exactly the details of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, because, I mean, I have no doubt we'll be able to prove conclusively, you know, there's already fairly conclusive proof that this was a surface-to-air missile, that it came along this particular track, that, and we'll probably be able to prove definitively exactly what type it was. All of this stuff will probably happen, but the who pushed the button kind of stuff is going to be very tough to prove.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, unless somebody has a voice print of these guys or something. I mean, I don't know how the hell you're going to be able to find that out.
And we did have those phone calls of people talking about it right afterwards. But
right.
But that's a little bit different.
Some people question the veracity of those, but I actually think that they were.
I think those are legit. Not that I know worth shit, but.
But I think those are legit. I mean, I think the reason some intelligence people are questioning because of the quality of them, but I happen to think that, you know what? I think the Ukrainians were freaking, like, figured out a way to freaking, like, monitor those calls directly, and I'm sure that they were trying to monitor all the traffic that they could.
Well, and also, the reason to think they're legit is because they are showing the, yay, we shot down a military plane. Oh, it's not military. Oh, it's civilians. Oh, there's a lot of them. Oh, crap. And then a lot of defensive. Well, maybe they were dead already.
What? We loaded a plane full of dead. Well,
that's one of the things that's been going. That's one of the conspiracy theories, is that they loaded a plane full of dead people.
Oh, yeah. That happens all the time, of course.
You know, and or they were all spies.
They were all spies, of course. Yes. It was a whole plane of 300 spies, and we loaded them on a Malaysian Airlines flight, of all fucking things.
Especially all those children spies.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, they make movies about those spy kids, you know.
Yes. And then, you know, they're the sleeper agents. Sleeper agents.
Anyway, but the fact that the sequence of calls goes through that sort of thing sort of feels to me more authentic. And you know, these feelings can be wrong, but you'd think if, like, Ukraine was trying to fake it, they would fake it in a way that was not quite like that.
No. I do totally agree. I mean, those calls to me sounded legit. Okay, all right.
It sounded legitimately like people who, as they realized what they were done, were upset by it.
Yes.
And we're trying to figure out, you know, is there any way this isn't true? Is there any way that we didn't do this? Because it's too horrible to imagine that we actually did do this.
You know,
that's the kind of feeling you get from those calls.
Yeah.
So to back off from this a little bit and wrap this up, I think the key is here. I think Obama's being good here and once again resisting all these calls from people who want to take this as an opportunity to escalate the conflict further. You know, no. This is an opportunity to perhaps to push for more peace talks or to push for, you know, more restrictions on the area or to keep arms out of the area or to have sort of a mutual agreement amongst everybody out of the Ukraine not to provide more weapons or something. It's a time to push for peace, basically. It's not a time to try to escalate this and talk about how we have to be tough on the Russians and do this and this and this and, you know, because these guys, that's crazy talk. You know, and I realize all of it's the usual group of people saying, we got to do something. We got to do something. We got to do something. No, we don't have to do anything. We don't have to do anything at all. You know, we can express our sadness and displeasure and hope that this will not happen again and maybe encourage some things to make sure it doesn't happen. And maybe, like I said, maybe a no-fly zone over Ukraine is perfectly, you know, a reasonable thing to say at this point. But, you know, no, this isn't a, you know, let's go escalate a conflict with the Russians about this. Really? The last thing we possibly want is, you know, tensions are bad enough with the Russians. You don't want to make it worse. Anyway.
Anyway,
let's take another break and we'll talk about Israel and Gaza and all that stuff again. I know we talked about it briefly earlier in the show, but we haven't really talked about this week's events. And, you know, one of the anyway, whatever. Let's talk about it. We'll be back after this. Okay, we're back.
We're back.
So the major new event in the last week since we last talked about Israel-Gaza, and last time we did our usual typical thing that, you know, sort of, we did a pox on the, both their houses, but we also said specifically, you know, Israel, the ratio of how many people they were killing versus the threat was out of control. And so this week, Israel went and followed that up by doing a land invasion of Gaza and stepping up their activities. I believe last week when we talked about it, there were approximately, 200 people had been killed so far in this. Last number I saw was over 700 now.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. And growing every day still. So by the time you listen to this, it's going to be significantly more. A few more Israelis have been killed at this point, but you still have, you know, huge ratio. Now, I want to talk about the ratio thing for a little bit, because I've seen a number of people comment on Twitter and in articles and stuff about this in terms of, like one that stands out in my mind is, you know, these people aren't happy because not enough Jews are dying. No. We don't want to balance the ratio by killing a lot more Israelis. No.
So that's the solution to problems. Just kill a whole bunch of more Israelis.
Well, yeah, a lot of people were implying that all of these people saying that, you know, the ratios are way too far off are what they really want is more Jews to die. No.
No, we don't want anybody dying, you dumb idiots.
I saw another one saying, you know, if you measure a conflict by how many people are killed, does the fact that at parts of World War II, there were 20 Germans dying for every Allied soldier dying, does that make the American, the German cause more just?
Oh, and, God.
And let me say to that, no, it does not make the German cause more just. It does, however, make the Allied cause a little bit less just. You know, because I've actually been starting to come to the conclusion that maybe you actually can look at historical things and say, you know, let's just see who killed the most people. And they're the worst ones. No, but the reality is it doesn't work neatly that way mathematically. But, you know, if they're... The bottom line is, if there's a conflict with hundreds or millions of people dying on each side, the only right answer is they both are awful. You know, the dying is bad, period. You know, and I frankly, yes, you can divide it into civilians, military, whatever, and all war is bad. But yeah, all war is bad. All people dying is bad. And yes, that includes combatants. It's bad when combatants die too. The right answer is to not fight, is not to be killing each other in the first place. And I understand the theory of just war, etc., where, you know, okay, if these people are doing something really, really horrible and the only way to stop it is to use force against them, then potentially that force is justified. I understand those theories. I kind of doubt them in actual practice because, you know, in almost all these cases, you end up with more people dying anyway. You know, and, you know, you could go into town on the World War II example and get all kinds of people upset. But the bottom line is, you know, have you really saved 700 Israeli lives by killing these 700 Palestinians? I don't think that you can make that case. You know, and that's one of the arguments is, yes, we're killing all kinds of people here, but we're saving future violence. I don't think you can make that case convincingly. You know, and I keep coming back to what we said before. Like, I don't think this is truly necessary. I understand. Look, I understand. They've been throwing missiles at Israel constantly through this whole thing. Like you were saying earlier, the Palestinians are not innocent here. However, you know, I don't think that there's I don't think this response is necessary. I don't think this response is proportionate. I don't think it actually, even from the Israeli point of view, I don't believe it actually helps Israeli security in the long run.
At all. No.
Maybe it has some short-term effect, but long run, it's not going to help. It's creating more enemies in the long term. And so I see this as almost completely just an unnecessary waste of life. And I'll add to, like, the Palestinians aren't innocent thing. The Israelis have been claiming, and I think facts have borne out, that in fact, yes, indeed, the Palestinians are using human shields. They have been storing missiles in the basements of hospitals. They have been putting their armed people in the basement of residential buildings. These things have been happening. They are true. You know, so, like, Israel says, well, you know, yes, we hit a hospital, but there were missiles there. And, okay, there were missiles there, but I don't think that gives you the green light to bomb the hospital.
Agreed. Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, just because, you know, somebody's a human shield, you know, doesn't give you the right to just go fucking kill them. I mean, I don't know. So, anyway,
and I said last week, you know, the way to solve this is to throw money at the Palestinians, and that was really an oversimplification too.
But
fundamentally, the end part is the only way.
That doesn't solve the problem.
No, as I said, that's an oversimplification. It's not going to solve the problem. There are too many hatreds here. The real solution is somehow you have to get to the point where both the Israelis and the Palestinians view the other side as human beings with value and purpose and whose rights are worth something.
Correct. And it's kind of difficult when you have an organization like Hamas that basically part of the charter that they have is the destruction of Israel. It's kind of difficult to get to that point as well. I mean, it's on both sides. I mean, yeah, I know Netanyahu is a fucking, like, warmonger, okay, all right, that has zero interest in peace, it seems to me. I mean, you know, and we've said this many times before. Okay, I
agree. There have been other Israeli leaders that I've believed have honestly wanted a peaceful solution to this.
100%.
Netanyahu is not one of them. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, zero interest in that. You know, and I don't think that Hamas, you know, is looking for any peace either.
No, I don't think so.
Great. So we got two fucking groups that are absolutely interested in fucking killing each other as much as possible.
And by the way, as we were talking about a little bit at the earlier part of the show, each one of these sides has legitimate cases about certain situations where the other one has been hurting them or done things against their interests or whatever. Like you said, Hamas has said for years they don't want Israel there. And you know, the rest of the Palestinian Authority, by the way, has moved beyond that. But certainly the militants in Hamas have not, even if there have been occasional reconciliatory statements. But Israel also, you know, the Palestinians have tons and tons and tons of legitimate grievances against Israel as well. There is no innocent side here. They are both guilty. They are both guilty as hell. Now,
and until they sit down
I do want to say that the thing is, even though they're both guilty in a lot of ways, the disproportionality that we talked about last week is still very, very important here.
Totally agree.
The Palestinians' capability of hurting Israel is trivial compared to the Israeli capability of hurting the Palestinians. And that has to be a factor in any calculation you have here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this is I keep getting despondent about these kinds of situations. That reminds me. The other criticism I've heard in other places is, you know, but this last week, while this was going on in Gaza, there were, you know, more people killed in Syria, including lots of civilians and lots of children. And why aren't we paying attention to that? And why are we all blaming it? We're all upset with Israel. But, you know, and look here, there are a couple counter arguments to that. First of all, yes, we were upset about Syria too. You know, there was a lot of talk about Syria. Now, I admit, there's not that much talk about it this particular week. And you know why? Because it's been going on for 4 years or three years or however long it's been. And it's every week there's stuff going on and there are people dying here and there's this. And you know, one of the natures of news is you pay attention to the thing that's new. And as horrible as it may be, the thing that's going on in Syria has been horrible for a long, long time, and it hasn't been getting better. And so we don't talk about it every week because it's the same as it was last week. I mean, obviously, there are new people being killed, and that's horrible, and that's tragic. But fundamentally, there's nothing all that much new to talk about. That's A. And B is yes, there is a double standard, and yes, we do expect Israel to live up to a higher standard than goddamn Assad. You know, you look at, if you look at a place that's known for having a ruthless dictators and has been at war for a long time, you know, okay, you expect them to be brutal to your people. You don't like it, but your expectation is, well, of course they're horrible to their people because that's what they've always done and they're awful people. But when you have somebody like Israel, yes, your expectation is this is a modern Western democracy and they should know better. Yeah. And they shouldn't be, you know, treating these people as if they were nothing. And I really,
you know what the, but you know what the worst thing is about this too, is that the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Syrians also treat the Palestinians like nothing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know, let's face it. The freaking Egyptians went and Egypt denied them immigration and basically put up a wall so they couldn't get out. The Jordanians have basically provided no support to them whatsoever. And neither have the Syrians.
Right.
And also, this is the one thing that also upsets me sometimes. When everybody's blaming Israel for that, okay, great. So you're saying the Israelis are not. Supposedly, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, and the Syrians are the brothers to these guys, right? Why the fuck are they not helping them to improve their livelihood either?
And of course, Egypt is not at all fond of Hamas either, now that the Muslim Brotherhood is out in Egypt. But, you know, yeah, if Egypt opened their border and said, anybody who wants out of Gaza, you're welcome. Come.
They haven't. They basically got them at gunpoint saying you got to stay here.
Not that I'm suggesting, by the way, that ethnic cleansing of Gaza is the way to go to solve this problem.
No.
But if you open that border, especially in the current situation, I bet you 90% of the population of Gaza would be gone in a week.
I don't know if that. No, I don't think that would happen because I think a lot of people have ties to the land there.
Yes, of course they do.
But
lots of people would leave. Even if they claimed the right to return, they would leave.
But not just that, they can't even go out and like move freely in order to do commerce. Okay, I'm sorry, great, so they say Israel is not providing open commerce. I'm sorry, Egypt is one hell of a very big country on the other end. You mean to tell me you can't conduct commerce in fucking Egypt?
Well, you remember all those articles a while back about the thriving business somebody had set up smuggling KFC into Gaza from Egypt.
Yeah, why in God's name does it have to be smuggled? If they are so fucking concerned also about it, I'm saying, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the Syrians, and those other governments, I mean, should also show some solidarity towards that, and they haven't, okay? All of them have turned their back on them and not provided the support that they really need. So I don't know. I mean, to me, the whole Palestinian situation to me is quite one of the most frustrating things. These people deserve a lot better than they're getting. And I mean, honestly, until a change in this, it seems to me like there were certain Israeli leaders that over the years were trying to give that, and then we reverted back to Netanyahu and their bullshit.
Well, okay. And if you remember, part of that is that when it looked like we were getting close to a potential settlement and the leaders were,
name was assassinated.
Well, Arafat died, and there's indications that that may have been an assassination too. The Israeli guy was assassinated by right-wing Israelis who didn't want a peace solution. And then also Hamas, who doesn't, like you said, just like Netanyahu doesn't want peace, Hamas doesn't either. Every time the Palestinians Canadian Authority got close to maybe getting a deal.
Hamas went and fucking like it, went and put the kibosh on it too.
Hamas went and attacked Israel and started blowing stuff up.
And
basically blew up the peace process every time. So. At some point,
I mean, you know, I'm trying to. I pulled up the name. It was Rabin who got assassinated.
Rabin, yes.
And Rabin was a guy who was a freaking military officer, and whatever. And he went and said, "Let's create peace. Let's do this." He went and out there, and you know what? He wound up getting freaking assassinated.
Yeah, and so. Like you said, bottom line, you put it perfectly. This is incredibly frustrating because you see this no-win situation where, because of all this historical stuff, people are at each other's throats, and you just want to tell them to snap out of it, break the cycle, everybody stop killing each other, and figure out how to get along.
No, they don't want to.
In the end, somehow or another, you're going to have to get along. You live within close proximity of each other, and absent some sort of ethnic cleansing where, and I'm not necessarily talking killing everybody, although that, who knows, that is would be a horrible outcome. But there's also, you know, the kind of things that have happened in various places in the past as well, where you've had population relocations, because people have talked about before, I've talked about before, you know, how buy the Palestinians a whole bunch of land in an unpopulated area in South America or something and offer them a whole bunch of money to move. But absent something like that happening, at some point they have to figure out how to live together. You know, and you know, do they really have to spend 100 years fighting before they get tired of it and figure out, you know, oh, whatever, let's just get along.
Yeah.
They'd all be so much better off if they just stopped all this stuff, started engaging with trade with each other and just moved on. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon.
So I know.
Before we wrap this sucker up, there was also the ban on flights into Tel Aviv, which, as we've been talking here in the last,
it's still 10, 15, ongoing.
No, it was just lifted.
It was just lifted.
The FAA lifted it. Of course, before the FAA put on their restrictions, a number of airlines had unilaterally said they weren't flying.
Well, this whole started because it wasn't just because the FAA started a ban. If I understood correctly, there was I think it was United Airlines flight heading there.
There were two or three American airlines who. So first of all, this was all prompted by some of the missiles that Hamas have been sending have been getting closer to the airport.
Really close
to the airport. So first, two or three American airlines, and I forget what order they were in, said they were halting their flights. Then the FAA came in and said they were prohibiting all American airliners to go there. Then the Europeans followed suit. And the FAA just lifted their restriction, as we were recording this show. And it's yet to be seen, like, individual airlines could still decide not to fly there.
Right.
The Europeans, who knows what they're going to do. But what do you think about that whole thing? Reasonable precaution or overkill or what?
It was fed by what
happened in Ukraine, too, obviously.
Exactly. I mean, in the light of what happened over to Ukraine, I mean, you think? I mean, you don't want to get your fucking plane shot out of the sky.
No.
I mean, I think that, no, I mean, some people are saying, this was a punishment by the U.S. towards Israel for what's happening. No, this was like the airlines first stopped flying because this whole, a plane just got, a 777 just got shot down out of the fucking sky a few days ago, and people got nervous. With good reason.
You know, also I saw just in the last, I don't know, 48 hours or so, the State Department put out a travel warning for Israel, Gaza, the West Bank, etc. And I saw that, I'm like, really, you think? and not only that, I'm like, really, just now? Just now?
I actually just had lunch today with somebody that just came back from Israel.
Yeah.
I mean,
And I had a Facebook friend who was there right before this started, who got out right as it was starting and posted something about it. I mean, Israel's a common tourist destination.
Yeah, I mean, my parents just went to Israel, I don't know, last year, you know, about 9 months ago. So, yeah. I mean, it's... Anyway,
it's not on my list to book tickets this week.
No, they actually Dirk Cruz originally was supposed to stop in Egypt, but because of the turmoil there, it didn't stop in Egypt, but it certainly stopped in Israel. So,
yeah, like I said, it's not on my list any more than, you know, Iraq or Syria or any of those places. Not on my list to go right now.
Oh gosh. Well, I don't know. Well, I still have it. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm going to go next week, but I would
I would love to go. I would love to go to Egypt. I would love to go to Israel. I would like to visit.
So we're going to go on a trip together? Is that what we're going
to
do?
I would love to visit Syria. I would love to visit Iraq. I would love to visit all these places once they sort of get over their current problems.
So maybe we should, get a whole, both the families together. We'll go on a trip. There you go.
A Middle East tour.
Yeah.
But
there is a nice cruise goes through there.
No, yeah. I know. At the rate things are going, though, I'm thinking we're talking like 2030.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Well, that's okay. I'm planning to get there earlier than that.
Well, I'm just saying, like, at the moment, things have been getting worse in those areas, not necessarily much better.
Well, see, I'm looking at a live FlightAware map, like right now, to see...
people still avoiding Ukraine?
No, I'm looking at Israel right now. I got some commercial flights coming in and out. Let's see, this is in... Well, obviously, the two LL. Flights that I'm looking at right now are both LL. So, I got an LL flight going... where the heck is this going? LBG, I don't remember. I can't remember where the hell that is.
Remember, it's the middle of the night there right now, too.
Yeah, no, I know, I realize that, but there's two LL flights right now on the way out. Let me see if I see any flights heading in. I don't see any planes with a track heading into Israel right now. Oh, there we go. Oh, beautiful. I got. Oh, wait. Come on, show me the. Oh, ow, ow. Anyway. No, yeah, so I don't see any obvious flights in a track right now heading towards there. Let's see, you want me to look at Ukraine? I'll look at the Ukraine right now. I'll scroll over here. Yeah, let's see, where the heck? Oh, God, my freaking... There we go, hold on. Oh, yeah, they're avoiding it like the plague. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody's avoiding Dirk Crane. They're all going around.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally around. There we go. Not a single... Over eastern Ukraine, there's not a single plane in the air. There's like... They're all around. It's just not one over.
Now, honestly, this is probably the least likely time for something like this to happen again. But, whatever. People are always afraid of the last thing that happened.
Yeah, they're not going to... So, anyway... Anyway, so that's that. All right. It's okay.
I think we're done here.
Yep.
Thank you very much for joining us. We had that super long first segment and then squished down to others a little bit, but we still went a long way. Long show today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As usual, you can email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm Abelsmay. Yvonne's I-M-Bo. That's B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. We love to hear from you. Thanks for the feedback last week. And, tell your friends, have fun, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.